Earlier this summer, I hosted a five-day virtual summit that was about navigating the future of entertainment. And I had some of the most amazing conversations with some of the most brilliant minds that I've ever met in my 10-plus years of podcasting. Now, when it comes to navigating our uncertain future as artists, as creatives, and storytellers, I do not pretend to have all the answers. And frankly, I'm not sure I have any of them. But what I can promise is that few are working hard to try and figure out where we are going next and how it is that we stay relevant while also staying sane. The following is my summit interview with writers and showrunners Liz Craft and Sarah Fain, and we talk all about how we blend legacy Hollywood and this next generation of content creators and what that new world might just look like and how we can stay sane in the process. All right, Liz Craft and Sarah Fain, I cannot express enough what an absolute pleasure and honor it is to have both of you here for the summit, where we and everybody else in our industry and anybody doing creative work and anybody telling stories is trying to figure out where are things going next. And I think few, if any, are going to be positioned to help us better answer some of these questions. So before I dive too deep into the details, because I've been really excited about this for a long time, I just wanted to say thank you to both of you for giving me your time and your attention and sharing all of your wisdom with all of us today.
Well, we are so happy to be here, Zach. So thank you for having us. We're excited to have this conversation.
Yes, thanks. Thanks for asking us to join you.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a follower of your podcast for a long time, but a follower of your work. I mean, frankly, I will argue and die on the hill that I think The Shield is probably the best television show of all time. I think I've watched it three times. Would give anything to have a time machine to go back to that point of my career and be at the level at which I could have worked on it. I was still kind of breaking in at the time, but The Shield might still be one of my favorite shows of all time. So just wanted to put that out there to get us started. So.
Same.
Right. We love it. And we have to say we're thrilled that Walton Goggins is having his moment right now.
Yeah, isn't he? Yeah, that's an understatement.
It is so fun to watch. It's the greatest thing.
So for those of you that are here that are attending that are saying, oh, I'm not familiar with Liz and Sarah, you are both the hosts of the Happier in Hollywood podcast. And I love the way that you frame this. It's a podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. Not to mention winning the war of attrition that is living in Los Angeles. First of all, I love the alliteration of all of that. You put what you do so perfectly. It's very clear that you're both writers. So having framed the conversation this way, my goal is to dig a little bit deeper into better understanding where I believe there's value and opportunity in all of the chaos around us, which is in understanding the value that very high-level creatives and storytellers can bring to this new creator economy. And the two of you are kind of at the intersection of both of those. And I'm hoping to bring some really in-depth, really good, deep questions to ask. However, the first place that I want to start is, what the fuck? Like, what is happening right now? Care to comment?
It's a mess. I mean, it's really a mess. I don't think anyone knows what's happening right now. It's like the networks and the streamers are all trying to figure out what they screwed up and what they can do to fix it. And they're sort of realizing, wait a minute, the broadcast model actually worked really well. And, you know, having a schedule in the year wasn't so terrible sometimes. And then, you know, trying to figure out what's good from streaming. It's just like a giant pit of chaos to me right now. But maybe we're starting to come out of it.
The thing is, the way people consume content is changing. I mean, period, has changed, is going to change, isn't ever going to go back. So it's not as if we can come out of it in a sense. Like, I think things can normalize and we can then work within that. But it's not as if there's some solution that's going to take us back to, you know, 10 years ago. So, I mean, which is where your question sort of about the creator and the creatives comes in, because we all have to find a different way forward, you know, just like print journalists have had to do in the past 15 years.
Yeah, and that's something that I've been trying to emphasize with my community as well, is that it feels like, and I say this in big air quotes, it feels like what we're going through is unprecedented. But I always kind of, you know, I always have an adverse reaction to the word unprecedented, because humans have gone through this process throughout time with these massive technological advancements. There's a lot of new and different things that are happening as far as, you know, streaming versus the old business models, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And I'm no Evan Shapiro, so I don't have the media forecast to know all the numbers and all the specifics of the streaming models versus broadcast. But I've always been saying that what it really comes down to, we just don't know how to find the eyeballs anymore and get them all in the same place. And when you can't get the eyeballs in the same place, you can't monetize the eyeballs. And things are now so dispersed that nobody knows how to make money anymore. So am I totally far off, given the perspective that you have from the development and the production side of television?
No, that sounds accurate to me. I mean, the other thing I think, and this isn't, I don't have numbers for this. I just have a feeling. And I think a lot of people have the same feeling, which is that forever Hollywood was proud of itself, proud of what we did. And it was like the studio heads, et cetera, wanted Hollywood to exist as a certain kind of place where, you know, American dreams were made. And I think really now it's just everything is so corporate that this idea of a pride and just that we make movies and make TV, and that, yes, of course, it's always been about making money, but now it really is only about making money. It's the only thing that matters. So therefore, every single decision is driven by that and not by sort of people or material, that I think it is why it feels very different.
It feels in a lot of ways, and this is not across the board, but it feels in a lot of ways like we make widgets.
Yes.
And we're just trying to figure out which widget will, you know, grab someone's attention the most.
Which is why those eyeballs that you mentioned are the only thing that matters at this point.
And I would say that there's been this endless argument of it's show business. No, it's show art. It's about the craft. It's about the industry. It's about, you know, the money. And I mean, basically, since this industry began, it has been about some form of commerce. So I would argue, to a certain extent, it has always been about widgets, but now I feel like it's only about being able to monetize the widgets, as opposed to, there was a part where, well, we got to make money. We have to have something that's reliable that's coming in, but there's always space to make great things too. And I feel like now the conversation about, let's take a risk and make great things while we also have another assembly line and a conveyor belt that's making the widgets to pay the bills. I feel like it's down to one assembly line, one conveyor belt. Every single widget must be monetized. It must be predictable. It's about quarterly reports and it's about shareholder revenue. And I just feel like all of the heart has been taken out of everything.
I mean, I think great things get through, like Squid Games, but they seem more like accidents, like we kind of stumble upon them, than like we're aiming for something really great.
Well, and if it's great and you think that can make money, great. You know,
right.
I mean, I think if HBO thinks something that's fantastic will earn them money, wonderful. But if they decide something terrible will make money, they would go with that instead.
So what does this look like from your perspective, literally in your writers' rooms, whether that's virtual, whether that's physical? How would you see the transition just in the way that the shows are being produced, the kinds of notes, the creativity or lack thereof? And I'm not talking 10 to 15 years. I would say, you tell me the delineator, but it's probably 2021 or 2022, or maybe going back to pre-pandemic. But what's kind of this major shift that you've been seeing on the creative side of it, rather than just talking about the number side of it?
Well, you know, so much of it is about budgets. It's about lower budgets and not wanting to pay writers and not wanting to have enough writers and not wanting to send writers to set, because that costs, you know, an extra few thousand dollars. So a lot of the creative actually comes down to budget, because budget very much impacts creative. I will say something interesting creatively that we've heard about, we haven't personally experienced this, is that writers' rooms are being told you need to sort of constantly explain what's going on in the story, because you have to assume that people are not just watching this. They are watching this and scrolling their phone. So they're not giving you the attention, you know, that they need to follow the story. And I will say, I myself am very guilty of that. So I know, you know, despite the best of intentions, the scroll is, you know, a draw.
But I think at the same time, everything Liz said is true. And we have to do the job the exact same way. Like, we have to think about it creatively the same way. We have to have the same high bar. You know, we very much write to a budget now. Like, it used to be you just like write something. It was like the coolest thing one, you know, and that we don't do anymore. We're always aware of budget. But you also have to have the same sort of creative ambitions that you had before you had to think about that.
From my perspective, it's going to be a little bit different from yours because I've been in the editing room and have done some associate producing as well. But by and large, it's been in the edit room where I kind of come into the process once the dailies start rolling in. And I was on Cobra Kai from 2018 all the way until it finished its run in mid-2024. And even throughout that process, I could start to see that transition where Cobra Kai was just these guys that said, we're going to make a remake of The Karate Kid. And it's going to be awesome and let's figure it out. And, you know, it was very low budget. They were really, if anybody actually knew the constraints that they had to make that show, they would just be mind blown. And I'm sure you feel the same way about all the shows that you produce as well. But I really saw the transition from we want to make something great. And I mean this at the studio and the network level, not at the showrunner level, but the transition from we really need to fit this into a nice, neat little box on the spreadsheet. Not that it hasn't always been about that, but I just felt like it kept crunching more and more and more. And the common sense logic would be, this is Netflix's number one streaming show on the planet for 2 weeks when it comes out. Why wouldn't you want us to make the best show possible? But all they kept doing was this and this and this. So rather than you becoming more and more successful and having more and more creative freedom, we were seeing less. And I'm guessing you've experienced this once or twice before yourselves.
Yes, that happens on every show. And we know from, you know, having met at Netflix, their thinking is, by season three, everyone who's subscribed to Netflix to watch this show has already done so. Therefore, we're just keeping those people who are already invested in Cobra Kai. We're not trying to get new people to watch Cobra Kai. So that, I think, explains that. The other thing is, as I'm sure you know, many people watching this know, certain, you know, actors, writers, certain people get paid more as the seasons progress. So, of course, the studio is not going to put out more money, so they have to compensate by cutting the budget in other areas. So that's another reason that happens.
So I'm curious now from both of your perspectives. I've heard you say in your podcast recently that you feel like you're kind of starting all over and you're back to hustle mode all the time. Not that there's never a moment in Hollywood where you never have to be hustling, but talk to me a little bit more about how it almost feels like here we are, it's time for the grind, we're paying our dues again. How have things changed for the both of you over the last few years?
You know, there was a long time where we never thought about getting a job. You know, we just always had job opportunities and it was just like choosing what we wanted to do. And that is very different for us and so many, I mean, everyone we know, basically. And so rather than kind of, you know, getting caught in the mire of that, we just decided, let's take this as an opportunity to like double down and to fire up and absolutely tackle this career the way we did when we moved here. And it's funny because as you mentioned at the start of the podcast, we say how to, you know, survive or win the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles. Well, when we wrote that line, we thought we had won the war of attrition. We were...
You want a different war on a different planet, right. But sure.
We were like, we'll give you so much advice about how to win this war of attrition because we've done it. And now we're like, oh no, the war of attrition is still happening. We are fighting this war. And in some ways, I think it's good for the podcast because it really puts us right there, you know, in the trenches, fighting and sharing how we're fighting. But I will say, it was nice when we felt we were the victorious and we were just coasting. That was, you know, that was very nice.
So given all of that, what I find curious about the two of you is that you, like you said, you won the war of attrition. And now it looks like, well, we won the battle, but we're still fighting the war. Given that you have a very successful podcast and you are, I know that this is going to be a very divisive term for the two of you, content creators, one would think, well, now just fully focus on that because that's the area that's absolutely exploding. So before we kind of transition to talking about the creator space, why make the decision to fight the war of attrition again, even though it feels like starting over?
I think we think of being content creators in a bigger picture way. Like we think of creating television shows as creating content. We think of creating novels as creating content. We just started a Substack newsletter that we think of as creating content. Obviously, we have the podcast. So I think we just sort of opened the umbrella of creator, you know, of content creators to include the things we've already been doing, the things we're doing now, and things that we're going to do in the future.
I also
kind of because we had no choice. Sorry.
Yeah. And I also think like so much of what we share in our content creation is about Hollywood and especially television writing. And if we were to just give it up, we would lose our knowledge of it. You know, I mean, especially in this changing world, we want to stay in it so we know what's going on. I don't, you know, we also talk a lot about, you know, wellness at work and staying sane. And again, I feel like the fact that we're actually doing the job and show running and developing makes all of that more of a challenge and therefore makes what we have to say more relevant.
And that's one of the things that I really respect about the work that you guys do is in this proliferation of content creators and a word that I know many will feel even more averse to, influencers. There are so many people that are putting a specific facade out there, but then you look behind the scenes and it's all bullshit. And I really respect the fact that in order for you to have great content as podcasters, you still want to be Hollywood insiders because that's what makes you better podcasters. What makes you better podcasters is working in Hollywood, and working in Hollywood makes you better podcasters. It's that synergy of these two things that I think is so valuable. And what I'm always trying to do, and I can't say that I have any of the answers, but I'm certainly trying to help all of us find them, is I'm trying to find the opportunities in all of this massive crisis and upheaval and uncertainty. And my gut is telling me that there's something about this intersection of really great storytellers, like the world's best storytellers are in this industry of Hollywood, right? We are the entertainment industry, but there's this whole new world of content creators. And right now, if you're looking at the numbers, YouTube is eating everybody's lunch, including Netflix. Whenever I ask people, what is the number one streaming platform? Everybody says Netflix. Not even close. YouTube is destroying everybody else. But they're two very, very different worlds as far as quality and type of storytelling. I think there is a huge opportunity where you take the best storytellers in the world, combined with the best entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial minds that understand how to build audiences, but aren't so good at telling stories. I think you bring them together. And I think the two of you are in a unique position where you're kind of straddling these worlds already.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. This is something we spend a lot of time talking about because we always say to each other, we're just doing this. We don't know where it's going. We don't know how it's going to pay off, but we just know that we should do it. And we're going to like find it as we go. And we also, I always say, I've probably said a million times, I wish I'd gone to business school before becoming a TV writer, because I think understanding that entrepreneurship is like the key to the future. I think you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, on a recent podcast, we actually had a friend of ours on to talk about strategic planning, because for the first time in our careers, we're realizing we need to have a strategic plan to even understand what we're trying to do. We haven't even totally identified what we're doing. We're just kind of doing it.
And to your point about YouTube, we're very aware that there's more I don't like the word should, but there are more things that we should be doing. We should be making more of an effort on YouTube. We should be actively involved in TikTok, neither of which have we ventured into really at all. Like, I think we maybe post our live Substack listener questions that we do every Saturday morning. We set it up to post on YouTube. I haven't checked. Is it actually posting? I don't know. Like, it's just so vast now. I think everything feels so big while being a lot of like tiny little component parts. So yes, we talk about synergy all the time. A word that a year ago I would not have used. I would have been like, synergy. Now we're like, synergy. How do we get synergy?
Yeah, the two words that sent shivers down my spine in one sentence, synergy and TikTok.
But God. Here we are.
Yeah, you know, my years ago when I was debating whether or not to get on Twitter, back when it was Twitter, my sister, Gretchen Rubin, who has a very successful podcast, said to me, do you want to be part of the next generation or the last generation? If you want to be part of the next generation, join Twitter. And I did, and I got Sarah to join, and then many, many other people, including Sean Ryan, the creator of The Shield, because we have to embrace these things. We can't just say, oh my gosh, I hate that, like, it's all about TikTok, and I don't understand TikTok, and nor do I want to understand TikTok. Instead, we have to say, okay, when are we going to set aside time to learn TikTok? When are, you know, what are we, how are we learning AI? How are we, I mean, all of these things, it's on us to figure out. But it's certainly, you know, if why we understood what to do, we would have already done it.
Yeah. Like book talk is literally on our to-do list.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm assuming when you're talking about having talked to a friend of yours in strategic planning, that was your episode with Laverne McKinnon, right?
This was in one with Todd Shulkin, but Laverne McKinnon is also somebody, I'm glad you mentioned her. So Laverne McKinnon is a former CBS executive who is very high up, who is now a career coach, and she specializes in career grief, career pivoting, and career transitions. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we have just fallen in love with her work is because it speaks to what so many people, I mean, not only in Hollywood, but, you know, all over are going through, which are these massive upheavals that are creating layoffs and people having to change careers at, you know, 40 years old and the how our identities are so tied up with our career. I mean, if you say, Liz, who are you? The first thing I'm going to say is I'm a TV writer. It is not, I mean, maybe it should be mother, wife, friend, sister, but the first thing I'll say is I'm a TV writer. I feel like that puts me in the world for you to understand who I am. And so when that is threatened, it is extremely upsetting. And Laverne addresses that.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you clarified that. And I'm going to make sure to promote all of the work that you're doing as much as possible. So in our show notes, just for the reference, anybody that's listening, Laverne is your episode 408 and Todd is your episode 415. And I wanted to dig into both of those. And I apologize that I'd kind of mixed up the conversations. But I think that these are the same conversation, not mutually exclusive. I think the conversation about identity transformation and which platform should I be on? I think these are the same conversation. And I'm going to give you a sense of why I think that. And I'm curious of what your approach is. I think in order for us to embrace that there's going to be this new world that we don't quite know what it looks like yet, it's kind of sort of maybe coming into a little bit of equilibrium, but it's still very hazy. We can't just say, all right, well, I'm going to stop doing the things that I'm doing and I'm going to transition and now I'm going to be a TikTok influencer or I'm going to create my own podcast, because there's this immense grief and this feeling of almost death that comes about where you have to say, this is not who I am and it's not what I do anymore. And this is something that I too have, because I've been both in the creative space, and I'm more on your side, Liz, than yours, Sarah, when I use the content creator title, still trying to make sure that one fits well enough. And I know you guys have talked about that as well. But having done this for about 10 years now, there was a period of several years where I would ask, like, who do I think I am to now be doing podcasting and career coaching when I'm an editor. That's what I've always done since 9 years old. I'm going to be on the stage with the gold statues. And there was a grief of letting that go when I said, I want to make this transition into this new world. And nowadays it's like, all right, well, you know, if an editing gig comes along, sure, I'll take the caller of the meeting, but I've removed that identity to now what I'm doing here is what I do. But for us to just say, let's get on new platforms, I feel like we have to have a sense of what our identity is so we can choose the right platforms that are authentic to that identity, which is why for me, I can't imagine there's ever a world where I'm going to be on TikTok because that's not authentic to the kind of voice that I have. Whereas Substack, as soon as I discovered it, I was like, these are my people. I love Substack. It's a completely different world.
Totally. And
from what I've learned about the entrepreneurship space, I certainly don't have a business degree or an MBA. But if you really focus your attention on the few platforms that put you out there authentically as yourself in front of the right audience, the rest of them are just noise and distractions. So I'm curious, do you guys really feel that you have to be on TikTok, given your audience and given who you are authentically when you put yourselves out on a podcast?
Well, we're not on there yet. So I guess if actions speak louder than words, that will be an answer. But I'm not convinced that we couldn't be authentic on TikTok, that it couldn't be for us. You know, I think it's just obviously I'm not going to be there like putting on my makeup and talking about something the way so many, you know, influencers are. That's just not something I would do. But I say that, never say never. But I think there probably are ways for us to be authentic on TikTok, on any platform, but which we just haven't spent the time to explore because, again, something like Substack is so natural for us. Like, it's writing, it's people who like writing, it's conversation. I mean, it is a perfect platform for us. So totally get why you love Substack. But the other thing I will say is that you have to fight for every single person. If you're setting off, as I'm sure, Zach, you have experienced, when you're starting out on Substack doing a podcast, it's not as if just millions of people suddenly find you. I mean, you have to go out and fight for every single person. So I do caution people about that when they want to transition. It's not as if it's an easy transition.
Right. And we actually talked to Laverne in a recent episode about sprouting versus blossoming. Sprouting, where you're like, you're just getting on Substack and it's so fun and it's new and your people are coming in and subscribing, is different than blossoming, where you're like really growing the roots and taking the time to build your subscriber base and find your people. And also I wanted to add to what Liz was saying about TikTok and YouTube is I think our goal is to find the way to be on those platforms that does feel like us. You know, like we're not gonna go and be somebody else on TikTok, but it is a goal to find the way to be on those platforms that feels right for us. And then hopefully people respond. And if they don't, then we fail. We fail at TikTok.
Well, we are not good at not being ourselves. I mean,
no,
we have tried. I mean, not in the podcast, but I mean, there are times when we try to act a certain way, you know, in a meeting or something, and we just aren't good at it. So I don't think we'd be able to do it any other way.
Mm-hmm. Also, we'd be giving each other weird looks and be like, what are you doing?
And I can tell you that one of the reasons that you're here is that I don't want to have any part in talking to people or promoting people that aren't authentically being themselves on those platforms. And that's one of the things that I've gravitated to both of you for years, is it's very clear you are yourselves, especially like with these new kind of Substack Saturday mornings. Like, you couldn't be any more like, this is just us on Saturdays. Like, what'd you do with the market this week? Like, that's what we need right now to just feel like we're all connected. And I want to come back to this TikTok conversation again, because I think the two of you, or anybody that's working at the level you are, you could be successful at TikTok. I think it comes at a price. I think it's a matter of, and I've read a lot of research on this, and I certainly don't have the recallability that an Adam Grant might. But once you're on these platforms and once you start to game the algorithm starts to game you. And you think you're putting on a face or a persona in the way that you're presenting and your voice inflection and the types of content that you create. And you're saying, well, this one blew up and this one didn't. So this thing that blew up was a little more incendiary. I'm going to do more of those. But then what happens is that actually starts to seep into your personality and it changes who you are as a person. So it's not that you're authentically putting yourself out on TikTok. It's that TikTok is telling you this is who you need to be to authentically game the algorithm and be successful. That's the part that I'm afraid of. That's the part that I don't want to be a part of, which is like going back to this idea of Substack, I feel like I can totally be myself. And the challenge is, yes, blossoming is really, really slow. And I'm a very impatient person. And I think with how quickly things are moving and how quickly it's all kind of fallen apart, nobody wants to put in the time because they can't afford to put in the time because we're trying to find that next gig or that next paycheck and they're just not there anymore. But my biggest fear is either the distraction of trying too many things, but the bigger fear is that the algorithm is going to change who I am and the kind of content that I create.
Yeah, and that is an insidious thing that I absolutely can see happening to people. In terms of the time thing that you mentioned, it's funny because in saying that we're starting our career over again in our minds, one thing that we have done is added back in doing work on weekends, because for years we had said we no longer work on weekends. We just were giving that up. If it isn't on Friday, it's not happening till Monday. I mean, unless we were in a real crisis for production or something. And now we work really every weekend in order to have the time to do the Substack and to work on our podcast, because we are spending a lot of time doing the other stuff. And so we just kind of had to add more hours in order to try the, you know, try to blossom.
And that's, I guess, a great place to go next is it's not as if you guys were in Hollywood, you were writers and showrunners, and now you're very active as podcasters and active on Substack. You're doing both simultaneously. I know how hard that is. I will be in the middle of a season cutting, and then at the same time, I have to wake up and I have to do a career coaching call for 2 hours, and I have to make sure my newsletter goes out at Friday at noon, and oh, is my podcast gone up today? Like, it's absolutely maddening, and it's very challenging to be one of the voices of really talking about the value of work-life balance and presence with your family when you're trying to balance both of these, especially now. Right now, I'm not working on a show by choice because I really want to go all in on building this summit, on building a creative community. But how in the world right now, given you're both back to paying your dues and you're building new platforms, how are you doing both at once, even with 7 days a week?
It's a lot. I mean, we took out a pitch last week. This week, we took out a pitch that we're attached to. We're writing a script. We're developing multiple things. We're doing the podcast. I think the podcast we had already integrated successfully for many years. So that's not new. That we already kind of had built in. And it's easy because we talk about it while we're working, or we just, you know, we have a script, we fill it in over the course of the week. It's just, it's more like dribs and drabs. And then we do that hour of recording. But the Substack and trying to figure out how to be in other forums, that's new and it's a lot.
And yeah, we are struggling with how to do all of it, honestly. We, you know, we'll just sort of decide, okay, today we have to work on this pitch and we just can't deal with anything else. Now, writing the Substack, for instance, takes a lot of time. I mean, what we write is short, but it takes a long time to write it. And that is, again, one of those things where just off on our own, you know, at 11 p.m., we'll be working on it. And whereas before, we would not have ever been working at 11 p.m. So we're kind of just saying we want to do this enough that we're going to do it. It's kind of like you hear about people who have full-time jobs, but they really want to write their novel and they wake up at 4 a.m. every day and write their novel. I sort of feel like that's what we're like right now. We just have this thing that we want to do. We really want to figure out this creator thing. And so we are just doing whatever it takes. And you know, it's nice with two people because we talk about everything. A lot of times we can accomplish things faster than somebody would do it on their own. Like if we were like, okay, what is our writing tip for the Substack this week? We sit there and go back and forth and we quickly come to a conclusion. Whereas if it's just you on your own, you know, you're pondering, you're thinking, it might not happen as fast. So I do think efficiency is part of our team superpower.
Yeah, people ask us a lot, like, how do you do this? Does one of you do editing and one of you does the other thing? And really, we just kind of move as a unit, but we're fast as a unit.
Well, I'm going to have to find either my Liz or my Sarah because, yeah. I mean, and I've got a great team of people, but like having that actual like contemporary writing partner, podcast partner or whatever it might be, that might be why just for me to do all of the content creation and all the producing and the summit and everything else. It's so interesting you bring up this idea of like, you know, the person with the day job that wants to start a novel. That's exactly been my approach to Substack. I looked at my calendar and I said, all right, well, family is not something that I can take off of the calendar. Sleep is not something that I can take off the calendar. And I can't change the numbers on the calendar. It's still 24 hours in a day and 7 days a week. If I want to be a Substacker and I want to write, guess what's going to happen? I'm waking up at 5 a.m. So that's exactly what I've been doing. Not a morning person at all. But that's been one of the hardest things is accepting that if I want to do these two things at once, even though there's a lot of, as we said, synergy, even though there's a lot of synergy there, they are very different compartments of your brain. And I can only imagine how challenging it is where you have to write, but write in TV form, but then write, but it's in Substack form. At least for me, when it was between editing a TV show or doing a podcast or career coaching, totally separate parts of the brain. It's got to be so hard to switch gears, but it's all writing.
Yes. Writing a pithy paragraph is very different than writing a scene in a script. Because on Substack, you want to say something meaningful, but in our newsletter, we also really want to keep it short. Like we don't want to be draining the life out of people when they get our newsletter. We want them to go like, oh, nice, nice. I like that. Fun. And move on. You know, like sometimes I don't read a newsletter because there's just so much, so many words, you know, or a note on Substack. It's just too many words. I'm not going to read it. But you still want there to be value in what you're putting out there.
The next thing that I'm really curious about is, and I might be getting myself in trouble here, but I'm not too worried about that because it wouldn't be the first time. I have found that in being very honest about my feelings about this industry, when I've published an article, like I had an article a few years ago that kind of blew up the industry. It was this idea of we don't want to go back to normal. Normal wasn't working. It ended up getting picked up by a few trades and had inspired. Remember the IA Stories Instagram account? That kind of blew up during the last negotiations. Mm-hmm. I hadn't started that, but the people that started it had done it based on this article. And boy, did I get my hand slapped by the studios. They were not happy with the fact that I was putting myself out there, even though I didn't represent myself as I'm this person working for this studio with this credit, but they were not happy. And I'm curious if you find that kind of living in both of these spaces, do people, are they encouraged where they say, wow, not only will you be our showrunners, but you have an audience that you can share it with versus like, hey guys, like, can you just focus on the show? And you know, you can play with your Substack and your podcast later. When you guys are balancing this all, what does it look like from the gatekeepers?
I've been surprised how little pushback we've gotten, actually. We have sort of wondered, are we going to get like a call? Like, we don't want you talking about the show. We don't want you doing this. When are you recording? Isn't that when you should be working? You know, we certainly were sort of worried that might happen, and we've never gotten that. Now, whether that's just because people, I think in the industry, are used to showrunners having multiple projects going, you know, or developing on the side. So I think they're kind of understanding of that. And we're careful in how we talk about things that we are honest, but we don't call anyone out. There's a few people. James Patterson, we've called out, but we don't call people out. We don't sit there and trash people. We really talk about ourselves, you know. So we haven't encountered that, but I'm not surprised that you did because that was very public, and it was also at a time that was very tense.
Having said all of that, where I'm now very interested to dig in a little bit deeper, given how much both of you are involved with, and given that, you know, very much you value family and friendship and everything else, how do you keep it happier in Hollywood as opposed to burned out in Hollywood? Because I have called myself one of the world's experts on burnout, not scholastically, not because I've written all of the papers and all the books, but in experiencing it. It's almost like I can set my watch to the burnout. So how do you guys keep it happier in Hollywood without burning out with all of these things that you're doing at the same time?
It's funny because Liz and I just had a conversation yesterday where I said, you know what? I went back on Wellbutrin. you know, like I had gone off because I was feeling pretty good. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. I just don't feel like it. Whatever it is, I don't feel like it. So I actually am going to need to get some of that Wellbutrin assistance. You know, I think we're just, we try to be very aware of when we're struggling and when we're not struggling and take action about it. And I do think being in a team really does help that.
Yeah, I mean, I always say the great thing about us being a team and being such close friends is that we have fun. Like we do fun things. Like when we're in, you know, there was a moment when we were in the woods in Hungary in 2 feet of mud at 3 a.m., and then having like mold wine, which
with, you know, these weird hats that our assistant gave us.
And it was fun. And so even in all of it, whatever's going on, we find our ways to have fun. And that really helps the burnout. Not that we don't say to each other, we'll text each other many days. Like, I'm so burnt. Me too. I'm so drained. I'm so tired. Me too. But we find our fun. And I mean, and Hollywood is fun. There are so many fun things. And so we find those moments. I always say to my husband, in fact, I'm like, I feel bad because I feel like I have so many fun things I do. Like Sarah and I just did this together. We just went to a hotel and like had a work session. And for us, that's fun. And I feel like you're just working, you know? So I think that helps a lot.
And we also take time when we need it. Like if we take something out and it's a pass, like if we, the script that we're writing, if they pass on it, we will feel like shit for several days. But at this point, we've been through so many bad experiences that we know we'll recover. And our recovery time is a lot faster than it used to be. So we 100% still get knocked down hard, but we get up faster. I think our resilience muscles are stronger than they were, you know, when we started.
I also think, and this is something you could speak to as well, Zach, that sort of counterintuitively adding in more things that you're doing can make you less burnt out. So learning something new, experiencing Substack, starting a podcast, all of those things, I think, keep us from burning out because we're learning new things, you know, living in that atmosphere of growth. I mean, I was saying to Sarah the other day, I said, our life is a series of wanting to learn how to do something, being terrified about it, like learning and having a great time doing it, having learned and then doing it for another 10 years. You know, it's like we just are always finding those new things. And I think that keeps it fresh.
I mean, but ultimately, isn't that really like the whole point of life is to have an endless series of challenges and problems that you want to solve? Like one of the topics that I talk about all the time, and I have been talking about this with some of my mastermind students recently, is that, and I'm going to put this out into the world, when I do a TED Talk at some point, the first line of that TED Talk is going to be work-life balance is bullshit. Because work-life balance is a myth and it is not something that exists. I had this conversation extensively recently with the author, Oliver Berkman, who wrote 4,000 Weeks. And what I always talk about is I would rather have some form of strategic imbalance, which is I love all the things that I'm doing. And for a certain period, you guys are probably all in on the show. Then you're in between pitches. Maybe you're not on a show. Then you're all in on the podcast or you're all in on learning Substack. But if we're looking for that proverbial balance, it's like, well, it's 8 hours working and 8 hours with family and 8 hours sleeping, especially for those that are highly creative, dear Lord, is that boring? And it just lacks meaning and purpose in your work. So there's certainly a line, but I find that oftentimes I have to acknowledge I'm really tired or I'm exhausted, but the burnout comes when I lack meaning and purpose in the work.
Interesting. Well, it makes me think of, we interviewed Channing Dungey, who is now super, super high up at Warner Brothers. At the time when we interviewed her on the podcast, I think she was still at ABC, and we asked her about this question, and she said that she just tries to be 100% present in whatever she's doing for however long it is. She just is present. You know, that's not always easy to do, but it's a goal.
Yeah. And we also, there's a really great director, Liz Friedlander, who said, I can be a great director and I can be a great mom, but I can't be both at the same time. You know, that like, you can't do all things all the time. I'm in a slightly more complicated situation because I'm an only parent. So a lot of my work-life balance is about, you know, when we were shooting Fantasy Island, as soon as my daughter would go to bed in the hotel room, Liz and I would sit on the patio and work at night. So it's less of a dividing line and more of a blend. A lot of the time, it's like I'm never fully 100% anything.
Yeah, and multitasking is just beyond exhausting. Yeah. So the thought of I have to be present as a screenwriter, I have to be present as a showrunner, and I have to be present as a parent at the exact same time, the brain and the heart just cannot handle those. But I'm so much on the same page that you want to be present and focused on one thing at a time. The challenge is that requires something called a strategy. That requires a plan, and you have to understand what are the boundaries that I need to set? What are the values that I want to work towards? So I wanted to come back a little bit to this conversation that you opened earlier about this strategic planning approach that you talked about with Todd and this idea of having a corporate vision board. So think for a second that we're talking to Sarah and Liz, but it's when you were earlier in your careers, but you've transported them to right now. So you don't already have a successful podcast and you're not successful showrunners. You have some ground, so you're not starting from nowhere. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that you know many, many contemporaries, colleagues, and friends that are in similar positions where they have just broken in. Maybe they got into a couple writers' rooms. Maybe they've even sold a pitch, but they didn't showrun it. How do we start to create a corporate vision board and strategically figure out where our career goes next when everything is out of control?
It's not easy. I would say a few things I would put on that board. Networking. I think networking is more than ever. Maybe it's always been this important, but I think networking is incredibly important. And I think that goes on the vision board. And then your craft. I mean, having the best material is, you know, again, always paramount, but even more so now.
I also think part of why we were successful is that we didn't know how hard it was to be successful. I mean, we were fools when we came here. We didn't know anything. You know, we were in our 20s. We were from Missouri. We didn't go to USC. We just thought, oh, we'll go and write TV because basically Liz's mom read an article about Friends writers. I mean, it was like, you know, that complicated. And we just learned as we went and met people. Like Liz always tells the story of how soon after we moved here, she found out that this guy, Bob Fisher, who was a showrunner, was at a party down the beach and she hopped on her bike and she pedaled down there and she met Bob Fisher, who is still one of our good friends to this day. Like, you have to be willing to do that and you have to pretend that it's not as hard as it is.
So I could not emphasize more how much I believe in the power of networking. It's why in an earlier day of the summit, I had a networking expert that literally wrote the book on how to build rich relationships, especially for people that are introverts. Because I think as soon as you say the word networking, especially to creatives, they're like, oh God, networking. Like I want to sit in my dark room and I want to make cool stuff and I want to write or edit or compose or whatever it is. But I built literally my entire career from cold outreach emails. And little did I know when I started building a career coaching program that instead of teaching people calendar management or teaching people the creative craft of editing, I spend most of my days helping people workshop their cold outreach emails. Because cold outreach is how people are building the relationships that they need to so they can be parts of the conversation. And I would guess there's no doubt it's the same on your end of the industry as it would be in mine. But there's no such thing as a job listing in this industry. The only right. way you're going to find out about opportunities is if yeah. somebody else knows that you exist, number one, and knows that you're awesome at what you do. So you can be amazing at what you do. Nobody's going to discover you. You can also be an amazing networker. But if your craft sucks, what's the point? And with the yep. market where it is right now and so much available talent, there's no way that an opportunity is going to fall in your lap other than the AI drivel that's on LinkedIn right now. So I could not mm-hmm. emphasize more. I'm so glad you brought this up. It is all about building relationships to make sure that people know you're awesome at what you do.
And the other thing, which we are still wrapping our heads around, and so I don't have a fully formed thought on this, but in some sense, seeing yourself as a brand is sort of where we are right now. We never thought of ourselves as a brand for years and years and years. And now suddenly, and this is partly because of the whole content creator thing, but also as TV writers, I think we need to craft some kind of brand for ourselves so that we can quickly articulate what we offer. You know, I remember when we were interviewing for the Shield, they asked what we would bring to the room and we had no answer. I said, we're always on time. I mean, that was literally all I could think of.
And we got hired.
Apparently they really valued promptness at the Shield. Yeah. No, luckily we had a script that Sean Ryan really liked, but because that was not a good answer. But one thing we are trying to do, actually, we have on our list to do is we want to write sort of a succinct 2-sentence description of what we do as television writers, which we've not felt the need for before, but now we want to have.
Well, and not just not felt the need for, I think we felt kind of the opposite. Our thing has always been, well, we can do everything. If you're a good writer, yes. you can do whatever, right? Like, right. we don't care if it's a procedural. We don't care if it's dramedy. Like, we can do episodic. We can do serialized. We can do all of the above. The tone, it really doesn't matter. Like, we're perfectly capable of accomplishing whatever we set our minds to. Now we're like, okay, we need the 2 sentences so that people can get it very quickly.
Yeah. So the value proposition, so to speak, which again, something that comes very much from the creator world and the influencer world. They are so good at this, being able to say in a sentence or even a phrase, like it's basically a log line. I mean, as writers, you guys have written yeah. log lines for a year, but it's a log line for yourself.
Yeah,
and exactly. I think that is so paramount because they want to know not necessarily what do you do, because everybody that's available can do the job at some level right now. It's how are you different? What do you bring to the table that all of the other people that also have Final Draft or have Adobe Premiere or Avid Media Composer or Logic or whatever the tool is, everybody's got the tools, everybody's got the experience, everybody's got the skills. What do you bring? And that to me is such an important part of figuring out what is my brand without having to lose that authenticity.
Yeah. And it is a challenge.
Yeah. So I want to be really, really respectful of your time. You've just opened Pandora's box. You have no idea. Talking about networking and personal branding, I could go on about these for about 3 hours, but I want to be very respectful of both of your time. But I want to make sure that before we close, I close the loop that we started with. Where do you think the storytellers in Hollywood can be tremendously valuable to the creators? Because I think the creators and their knowledge of business and algorithms and personal branding, there's a lot they can bring to the creative space in Hollywood storytellers. Where do you think we can be the most valuable to the creator world?
Boy, that's a good question.
I know we're looking at each other. That's a big question.
It's a big question. I mean, I think that goes to what is the future of the industry? You know, are there going to be shows on TikTok, on YouTube, as there are on, you know, ABC, NBC, and Netflix, et cetera? It's interesting because I was thinking about this exact question the other day because I happened across on TikTok a scripted show that was three young women in an apartment, and it was about, it was called Group Text Chain, and it was about the group text chain before meeting up for a brunch. And so it was, you know, three women in different rooms, and they were like having these snarky conversations and side conversations. And it was something that they were able to do, but it was all scripted. And I thought, this is like really fun to watch. It could be way better. And that right there, I'm like, oh my God, is this the future? You know, am I going to, are we going to get hired to write something like this? And then, of course, the monetizing all comes in. This also goes to, as writers, we do need to be more entrepreneurial. And again, as I said earlier, it feels like a huge challenge to understand how to be entrepreneurial, but it's partly cutting through the middleman, right? And just putting creative people together.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like just those, that line is going to be erased.
Yeah.
Over time, there's just not going to be a line between the two. I came home yesterday and my daughter was like, oh, I just watched a movie called Hurricane Bianca. And I was like, okay, great. And she wanted to show me part of it. It's on YouTube. It's a YouTube movie with Rachel Dratch. And I can't remember who else is in it, but like people who I recognized that was done specifically for YouTube. It has a sequel. That's just where people are finding things now. Nobody is going, I'm going to turn on NBC. I wish they were, but they're not. They're going to YouTube.
Well, I've been saying for a couple of years now, and again, this is coming from a place of, I'm certainly not the expert. I don't have all the details. I don't have all the data. I'm not inside all of the insider corporate conversations. But where you started was that the broadcast system worked. And I think we're going to go back to the four networks that we remember from the 80s or 90s, but it's not going to be Fox and ABC and NBC and CBS. It's going to be YouTube, Netflix, Apple, and Amazon. We're going to be back to these four networks. This is where everything is concentrated. But I think the most important thing that you said, Sarah, is that there is going to be no line anymore. They're going to blur together. And I feel the biggest disservice we can do, and I was recently called by somebody in the creator space, they called me Legacy Hollywood. That one hurt, but they were also right. And if we continue to see ourselves as Legacy Hollywood, there's a moat around the work that we're doing. We are the gatekeepers. We are the ones that create the content. That is fast to death, and we're watching it happen right now. It's if we embrace and we see the opportunity and the overlap and figure out how we can be valuable to them and vice versa. I don't know where that goes, but I think that's the path. That's at least that's the reason that I'm organizing this summit, so we can just brainstorm all this together. So
that is the path. You're absolutely right. And one other thing I just wanted to mention, we're just wrapping our heads around how everything is just going to be international. And like, we're thinking, you know, if the next show we make very likely will not be made in the United States. And we may be living in Australia for 6 months. We have a friend who's been in London for a year and a half, you know, and again, with the world of content creation, you know, there are no lines, as you said, but there's also no lines, you know, in terms of the countries. So anything is possible, and it's all global. And the bigger it gets, like, the more confusing it is, but also it's exciting.
Yeah, I've been talking about that as well, this embracing, whether we like it or not, of the globalization of the workforce, because the pandemic showed us technologically it can very much be done. And I've seen several spreadsheets going around kind of internally from different teams and different productions of all of the shows that are being outsourced to other countries, like shows that have been here for years and years in the unscripted space and the scripted space, people that are saying, I've been on the show for years and they just outsourced everything to Canada or outsourced everything to Ireland. That's the reality that we have to face. Do I like it? No. Do I think that's the direction we should go? No. But we also have to face reality and take responsibility for the fact that we need to find our way through this. So I'm very glad that you brought that up. I feel like we've just gotten started. I'm so glad that I had both of you on the conversation today so we can talk more about this and brainstorm together. Again, full disclosure, I don't have any of the answers. And I love that you feel the same way. I just think we all need to talk about this in an open forum and space, and we need to communicate about it. So to leave everybody that's here that is most likely a little bit afraid for the future, they're trying to find their way, trying to still maintain some semblance of a creative soul so they can actually enjoy their work. Is there anything that we have not talked about yet that you want to leave people with today?
We end every podcast with, it's a fun job and we enjoy it. It's something that Liz said organically many years ago.
I have it on my sweater for anyone who's watching.
I didn't even realize that. and just like going back to that, just go back to that. It's a fun job and we enjoy it.
Well, I'll leave everybody here to make sure that they have the show notes to go visit you, go see Happier in Hollywood, the podcast, find you on Substack. Highly, highly recommend that they like, follow, subscribe, smash all those buttons, as they say in the YouTube world. But again, I just tons of gratitude to both you and Liz, Sarah, both of you for sharing your expertise today and giving us all just a little bit of hope and a little bit of direction for this uncertain future. So thank you so much for being here today.
Love talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.